listening to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Make sure I edit that bit out. Hello and welcome to episode 224 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb. Am I a good pal, Sean Orford? You all right, Sean?
I'm very good. I just need to say to the public that the first time in at least 150 episodes, Ed just got that completely wrong. And we'll see whether he edits that out before
my intro.
Yeah,
I do tend to. Once I get in the swing of it, I'm fine. But it's just that first few seconds when I'm just trying to get up to speed. I must apologize as well for a few people that may have downloaded the original episode last week. Before I had a chance to fix it, there was a bit of a gap halfway through where I went offline briefly. I think Sean was chatting to himself.
Intelligent conversation.
I was alerted to it quite early on Thursday morning when it went online and fixed it quickly. But I think 200 or 300 people will have downloaded and listened to that. So,
I saw somebody today. He said to me how much they appreciated you and I doing this. And they were saying about how they found it really funny, and they enjoyed the fact that we weren't necessarily sat in a studio, and they were recalling the episode where I was in the car park.
The Aston car park, yeah.
And were you in Northumberland then?
I was, yeah. I was at my auntie's house in Northumberland, yeah. So technology, yeah. We're kind of drifting in towards doing these online a lot, aren't we? I hope if people kind of thinking there's a bit of a spark, a bit of chemistry gone, or maybe they prefer it, let us know. But
yeah,
it's pretty handy, I must say.
Yeah, technology, amazing,
beautiful. Amazing. Well, yeah, and technology is kind of sort of what we're talking about today, but in the kind of human medical sense, we're talking about organ donation, aren't we, Sean?
Yeah, and this is quite a difficult issue for lots of people to get their heads around.
But... Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, we're not shy. We're going to go and dive into that. Before I do that, any new listeners, welcome aboard. Liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. Head over there for all the show notes and links from this show. There'll be quite a few. And all previous episodes as well. There's a treasure trove of episodes and information for you. If you'd like to be the first to hear about this show, stick your email address in the box on the website and you'll join our mailing list and you'll get some free meditation files as well. Superb. And yeah, don't forget, we do have a book, Live in the Present, beautifully written by Sean, sort of well designed by myself.
Amazingly designed.
Yeah, of course. No, it's a work of art. It's one of my highlights of my design career. But check it out, see what you like. And you do get, little secret, a 10% discount when you sign up to our mailing list. So yeah, don't tell anyone though. How you doing, Sean? How's life?
Very, very good. I have got a pizza oven.
I've wanted one finally.
Forever. Yeah.
You've got your loft, which we never use, and you've got your pizza oven now.
Yeah. It was really, really funny. I fired it up for the first time, getting it really, really hot so I could cook. Do you say focaccia or focaccia? I don't know what you say. It was one of those, right? So I made that, and then I got the oven ready. I put it in the oven and the loaf burst into flames.
Blimey, it was that hot.
I'd heated it up. It must have been about 500 degrees. I've had to go out and get a thermometer so that I can actually regulate the heat of the oven because it gets amazingly hot.
So what's a good temperature for focaccia?
I think about 200. So I was well over. Yeah, but I need to play. We did actually manage. Ree was really good. She, we put a pan of water in and it boiled. We boiled off some cauliflower, and then she made a cauliflower cheese in it, and it was really good. It was amazing.
Love it. Well, I wait. There's still time, isn't there, for kind of a late summer autumnal?
Yeah. We're gonna have loads of fun. I'll do the Christmas dinner in it.
Yeah. Oh, now you're talking. We could do some kind of podcast special, couldn't we? When we sit outside and.
Yeah,
keep ourselves toasty and get a pizza on the go and record an episode as well.
Sounds good to me. Yeah. So, what have you been up to then?
Yeah, well, I've just, it's all go, man. We work in kiddies and all that. It's good. I've just got back from a World Council active travel forum, like a bit of a council meeting about encouraging people to cycle to work and walk more as well, and how we can kind of alter the infrastructure and roads and all that to make it a bit better for walkers and for cyclists, which was kind of why I was there.
Yeah, that's good.
More. So yeah, I'm getting stuck in, man. I'm loving it.
Because you cycle quite a lot, do you? Every day.
Every day to and from work. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Twice today because I had to go to work, and then I had to come back, get the kids, and then I had to go back for this meeting as well to Birkenhead. So yeah, it's just habit, really. That's the thing, you know. I'm not some, and you know, it's just getting the swing. If I had a car, like if we had two cars as a family, and when I do have access to a car, I tend to drive to work because I think that's just how the brain works, you know. So,
yeah,
putting out the option, not giving myself any other option.
Yeah,
I do. So it's cool. Yeah, I love it though. I do, and I get in feeling good. I've got back from a ride now, and I feel bright as a button. Whereas usually around this time, I'd be getting a bit sleepy, ready for bed, and all that, and struggling to get through a couple of emails. So,
yeah,
highly recommended. But yeah,
sounds good.
Keep you posted. We'll crack on with this week's show. Organ donor story that you were sent an email by a client. Do you want to?
No. What happened was a client actually wasn't even a client. It was someone that came up to me. He was a listener of the podcast, who I won't identify.
Of course.
But they came and they showed me the article, which was about the young girl who had died, and the family, despite their difficulties in coming to the decision, had donated the child's organs, and that the child had saved the lives of 8 people, which was an extraordinary 13-year-old girl.
Yeah, 13-year-old girl died from a brain aneurysm. Helped a record 8 different people, including 5 children, through organ donations. Incredible story.
Which, I mean, that's an amazing thing, just the concept of it.
I mean, you'll know more about the ins and outs of this, but you've got to act pretty fast on stuff like this, haven't you? So the family that I'm assuming will have been dealing with the trauma, horrendous trauma of losing their child, will have had to make this snap decision.
Yeah.
So flipping heck. I mean, from my point of view, it's an incredible thing to do. And I don't know if I would have the courage to do that and make that decision quickly enough. I think I would, to be honest, but I don't know.
Very often the body, if you're going to call it that, the body is kept going through life support systems. So the organs can be kept fresh even after the point of death.
Yeah.
Which sounds a bit weird. Not for long, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, we don't want to go too grim on this one, but I guess, yeah, they will have had a bit more time. I guess in the instances of where it's been a bit more of a car accident, or where they've died a bit more instantly.
Yeah.
It's a bit trickier.
Well, this guy came to me and he said, could you do a podcast and just talk around the idea of organ donation? Because they were in a similar situation where they had an imminent death and they were having to make decisions. And one of the things he was talking about was the problems between different members of the family and even the beliefs and the interests of the person who would be the donor. And how do you as a family resolve that, which is hugely, hugely difficult. And it's one of those things which in many ways the answer is there is no answer. And it's one of those things that you have to, as a family and a group, work through and come to some collective decisions. And the chances of everybody agreeing are probably a bit small, really. Huge issue.
We'll come more on to the kind of the technicalities of being an organ donor later. As a child, as a minor, I take it, is it just the parents' decision?
Obviously, parents would have some idea of the child's wishes. But one of the issues always is, what is it that the parents, because if you think about it, in most situations, we're talking about death here, aren't we? Yeah. Is that the issue about after death isn't about the person that's died, it's about the people that are still alive.
One thing, obviously technology has come on quite a bit in 10, 15, 20 odd plus years. Certain religions, faiths aren't ready for this kind of change, are they? Do you have any examples of this is just a no-go zone for certain people?
I think it's a no-go zone for loads of people. Jehovah's Witnesses would not have anything to do with any kind of body transplants, but even blood donations, blood transfusions are against the Jehovah faith, and to the point where you can't even store your own blood to be used later. That's considered to be wrong, because it's that sharing or the transportation of body products, which is not seen as good, you know.
I think I did read in, I don't know if it was in that BBC article or somewhere else while I was just researching this, I think 60% of people in the UK when surveyed have said they're pretty cool with it, or they are very cool with it, and they, you know, they would sign it. I think a lot of people also, when these things come up on in the news, say that they would rather it was kind of an opt-out rather than an opt-in.
Yeah. But 60% of people actually carry donor cards.
Right, okay.
That's the thing. Whereas only 4% of people actually give blood. And the need for blood is much higher than the need for organs. We need blood every day for people that are damaged, being operated on or whatever. That if you're getting your head around this and you're listening to this, anybody, if you want to give blood, that is just such an amazing thing to do. You will save so many people's lives by giving blood. Forget the organs. The blood is the thing that saves lives in the short term.
Yeah. We've got in your blog post, which you didn't mention at the start, but you do a blog post to accompany every podcast we do.
I do.
You mentioned a few things, and you've got links to loads of articles, which is, I need to read, all look fascinating. You had this one story about the man who rejected his donor hands. What's all that about?
Yeah. Well, it was an amazing operation where they actually managed to give this guy who'd lost his hands someone else's hands that worked. He couldn't cope with it. The hands there, they worked, and he had to kind of work with them to make them function properly. But he couldn't emotionally accept the hands. And in the end, he was asking for the hands to be removed. You know, so that the issue isn't simply about, hey, I'm going to donate bits of my body to someone else. It's, can that person actually accept those bits of my body? Yeah.
I think when it's something like that, it's not easy anyway, but to accept an organ that's going to be tucked away neatly underneath where you're not going to be seeing it all the time. I mean, it must be quite of a strange-ish feeling anyway, having someone else's organ inside you. But to have something visually that you're seeing all the time, like hands, that is a bit of a big...
One of the links that I've put up on here, on the blog, is to somebody who had their face transplanted face. And you have a picture of the guy before, you got a picture of the guy when he was damaged, and then a picture of what he looked afterwards. Now, he looks nothing afterwards like he looked before, but he looked okay. And the thing is, he's then got to look in the mirror and learn to identify with this new face as himself. And that's the bit that people find very difficult. It's like, can I actually identify this different-looking person as me?
Yeah. Do you think you'd overcome that? Do you think you'd accept it?
Well, I think it's going to vary on the person. But one of the things that I've learned with aging, and I'm not that old, but one of the things I've learned with aging is that when you look in the mirror, the face that you see in the mirror isn't the face that you were looking at 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And that's true for all of us. And each of us have to come to terms with this new who we are, who we look like. And that's on a daily basis, looking in the mirror, having a shave, cleaning our teeth, whatever we're doing. So that idea about the transforming self is a real one. I guess that when you had a big transplant, like a facial transplant, that change is enormous and it's immediate. It's not gradual.
Yeah. Are you on the donor list, Sean?
Yeah. I have a donor card.
Well, one issue that I was thinking about. I am on the donor list. I have no idea where my donor card is. So whether I can re-register and have another one sent, or we probably need. I don't carry a wallet with me. I have a phone, and I have just a debit card plus maybe a credit card for emergencies in my other pocket. So I don't carry a wallet, and I don't know, a lot of people tend not to. I'm not quite a millennial. I'm sorry to say. But I think millennials and younger people in general don't carry wallets. So I think that's an issue, something that needs to be addressed, isn't it? Because when things do kick off and a person is pronounced deceased, perhaps in a car accident or something, then there's an opportunity, a short-term opportunity to do some good, or for some good to come from a horrible situation like that.
Yeah.
To rely on this little bit of plastic that might be in someone's front, back, who knows what pocket. It's quite a tricky thing.
I'm actually not sure. I need to check it out. I don't know whether, from a digital point of view, that we are already on it, if you've signed up for it, and that it can be checked that way, whether you actually have to have the card on you with a signature on it, maybe.
Yeah, I guess they got some kind of ID on them. I don't know. It's tricky, isn't it? We'll look into that a bit more. But we are going to give some links out later on to where you can register to become an organ donor. One kind of interesting philosophical thing I want to talk about is that for people that might be struggling with the idea of, you know, signing up to this and giving away bits of themselves, or maybe their loved ones on their behalf, kind of making that decision, is kind of getting around the idea, how to get around the idea of which parts of us are us, if you know what I mean. Is it, from my point of view, hearts, kidneys, the major organs aren't really me as such. It's more kind of my personality, that kind of thing. I guess if you're talking about face transplants, that's kind of getting into different territory. But what for you? What makes you you, Sean?
I don't see it quite like that. I see my body as a vehicle that I'm using. And once I finish with it, I don't really give a stuff what you do with it. There will be...
official. You heard it here, folks.
Yeah. You can take it down the dog's meat factory. I don't mind. The issue is, for me, is that funerals and death is about the living. It's not about the person who's died. I don't mind whether my body's used for medical research, whether it's donated, whether it's burned, buried. It's really to do with the people coming behind me. And my message to them is, I really don't mind. It doesn't bother me one way or the other. I think for some people, those things are hugely contentious. I do not want, or I must have. I know people that have donated their bodies to medical science, and their bodies will be taken off, which means there will be no funeral for them, which is quite interesting. There might be a kind of a service of remembrance, so there'd be no actual internment of any remains of any sort. So I think that each of us have to make that kind of decision for ourselves. We know that this young girl who died saved 8 people's lives. Well, when you and I die, we could save other people's lives if we think that that's the right thing to do. I mean, one of the things that comes up in the blog that I put down here is the idea of us genetically engineering animals so that we can then use their organs for us. And that's at the moment they're using pigs to do that. So the idea is that we could genetically engineer a pig so that we could use its heart or its liver or its kidneys or whatever, and they wouldn't be rejected by our own immune system. So it would work. And for some people, that's, oh, well, that's really good news. That's great. And for me, I'm thinking about, what about the pig? Because I see the pig as an individual, like I see you or me. But if you eat meat and you're okay about eating pigs, then I guess that to be able to reuse their organs productively is like a double whammy. You know, like you can do both things at once. You can eat the
You can nourish your body, and you can keep it ticking along properly as well.
Yeah, if that's what works for you, then maybe that's a good.
I think we're reasonably close technology wise as well to be able to kind of grow individual organs in a little petri dish type setup. Even to kind of 3D.
That's using your own tissue, isn't it? And then.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
So there's less chance of far less chance of the body rejecting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Things like 3D printing of organs using certain plastics and that kind of thing. It's pretty fascinating, really.
They do that with bones and stuff like that now, which is good. Mm. Interesting. But I think that it comes down to. It's a philosophy about what happens when you die.
Yeah.
If you believe when you die, it's an ending, there's nothing after that, then the motivation and energy to keep this going for as long as possible is greater. If you're in a position where you believe there's something afterwards, then it's just like a stage in a journey.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is belief stuff.
Well, you've got a paragraph in your little blog about fecal transplants. Sounds pretty fascinating.
Well, I love that because we now know that there's a relationship between the gut and the brain, and healthy gut, healthy brain. But there's also certain people, it's still theoretical really, but certain people believe there's a relationship between things like autism, Asperger's, that kind of stuff, and the state of your gut. And one of the things that we know is that with the medication that we take, especially antibiotics, that we keep ripping the gut flora out of our gut. It starts to break down and the characteristics of the gut change. Therefore, the characteristics of the brain change. So there's a whole load of research going on, which is said to be very successful, where you can take fecal matter, which means poo, out of someone else's gut, and process it a little bit, and then implant it into someone else's gut and create this new flora. So if you've got someone that's got like a healthy gut and a healthy brain, and you put their poo inside your gut, then you can start to change your flora in your gut and then start to change your brain and your emotions and your well-being. And lots of kind of disease conditions as well. So it's a huge area of research. But we're back to donors again. Are you prepared to donate your fecal matter to help other people? Are you prepared to donate your organs? Are you prepared to donate your blood? How does that work for you?
Yeah, and then we come onto the area of the reproductive system in terms of donor eggs and sperm, which is generally pretty well accepted now in terms of IVF and other fertility clinic setups. Yeah. It's just kind of pretty standard stuff now.
Yeah. And it isn't just as simple as eggs and sperm. What happens if I'm a woman, I'm using my eggs, I need them fertilized, so I'm now getting someone else who I don't know to provide the sperm, and then they're going to be put back inside me. We're starting to kind of move around. I mean, in many ways, that fertility treatment is doing what would happen naturally, mechanically.
I wonder what the end game for the human race may be, that in 100, 200 years it might be considered kind of a bit disgusting and horrible to kind of have a baby via intercourse and all that horrible messy process.
Disgusting. I think there's something which is actually more difficult than that, something which is potentially more of a problem, and is this: if two people can't reproduce naturally, is that Mother Nature saying these two people shouldn't reproduce? No, this is not a right reproduction, because I've seen I've actually worked on IVF programs doing support, and I've seen situations where couples can't reproduce together. And in the end, they split up. They've tried IVF, it hasn't worked. And then they've gone off with other people and they've got pregnant just like that. Like, there's no problem. Yeah. And that makes me think,
is it that nature's saying, no, these two people shouldn't reproduce? And when we force the reproduction through IVF, are we putting bad genes into the gene pool, which will come back and bite us in years to come? I wonder.
I wonder indeed. I guess time will only time will tell on that one.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty contentious stuff, isn't it? But worth discussing it then.
So if we come down to brass tacks, would you donate your organs to another person? Would you do that?
Certainly. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm on the organ donor list as it is, but for sure, you know, if a family member or relative or friend and was in need of a kidney or a who knows what, I'd step up to the plate and offer my services, so to speak. You're similar, Sean.
Yeah, I would. What would you accept an organ as a donation?
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, it'd be a no-brainer. I mean, if it's between that and like 10 years extra life and a good quality life and not doing it and maybe you only having 6 months, then yeah, absolutely, I'd go for it. I'm not saying it would be easy. I'm not saying it would be an easy process, but yeah, for sure, I'd give it a go.
Yeah.
It's what makes me isn't my heart, my kidneys, my lungs. It's although I've worked pretty hard to keep them in decent condition. It's my noggin, you know, it's upstairs.
So would you donate your brain?
Well, I was just going to say, I think there is due to be the first trial of a brain transplant.
Yeah.
Soon-ish. There's some Russian guy, I'm sure. I'll try and find the article and put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
But there's someone who's finding the right surgeon, and he's, I don't know whether he's reaching the end of his life potentially, but basically he's up for a brain transplant. So I didn't think that was even remotely possible given the complexity of all that.
So does that mean that he wants his brain in a donor body?
Yeah. I need to dig out the article. It's just come back to me now. But I think, yeah, basically he's basically kind of waiting for a body to become available that he can put his brain into and to extend his life. So
maybe that's like a head transplant.
I know. Gee whiz, it raises all sorts of crazy questions. But, I mean, I think we have mentioned in the past about how we may be able to kind of digitally replicate ourselves at some point, kind of store our brains on a hard drive to allow us to, I don't know, live forever. Who knows?
But would that, it's the emotional connection, isn't it? If you had a digital you, would you actually be emotionally connected to it? I don't know. That's another world.
Humans are easily fooled, aren't they, and easily tricked. And I've talked about it in terms of the computer revolution that's on, you know, we're in the middle of, and artificial intelligence and virtual reality. And I think we're close to being able to kind of create digital versions of, like, you know, you talk to Siri or Alexa to do little tasks, and I think you'll be able to talk to anyone you want, have a little conversation. A digital version of them, and I think for a lot of people that could be really quite powerful and comforting, you know, just to be able to talk to, I don't know, someone that's passed away, your grandparent, your partner, who knows, but as long as you know that it's not them, but it's just you can hear their voice. I think that's a really powerful concept.
It raises so many issues, the whole area. It's huge.
Flip and Eck, we could talk about this one for a while, and this one raises more questions than we have answers, I think, doesn't it?
Have you worked
with any people one-on-one with dealing with issues like this to kind of help them through the process?
Yeah, I've dealt both ends with people that are donating, people that have been live and healthy but have decided to donate a kidney to a complete stranger because they just feel it's the right thing to do, kind of altruistically. Through to people that are in, as this chap who's speaking to me, having to make a decision about what do we do with the organs of this loved person that we love. Is it right that we do something to share those organs on, or do we allow those organs to die with the person? I suppose one of the other things that informs my thinking is that I did the support work around the older hay organ retention issues. And I don't know whether people are aware of that, but there were literally hundreds and hundreds of children who had organs taken away after they died. They were taken away in theory for research, but that taking away was done without the knowledge of the parents. And then there was a huge issue afterwards. And that idea that for many of those people that I worked with, those organs were their child. And yeah, for some people, we ended up having 5 funerals for one body, that kind of thing.
Wow.
As different organs were found in the system that needed to be put with.
I don't want to have a little lull in the podcast in terms of talking about dark and things, but I've had an email from a listener as well. He wants us to talk more about death and the issues around it, not about the organ donation side, something else. Yeah. Quite a powerful story, actually, he sent me. So we might come on to that in an episode or two as well. It's fascinating stuff. Have you got a resource for us, Sean?
Well, my resource is the link to going to print off your own donor card to sign it and to put it in your wallet. I would suggest that if you do that, you do that with the knowledge of your family and the people around you. So there's a shared decision. But it's that idea that if you want to do this and you want to share bits of your organs once you don't need them anymore, then to carry that card means that they will naturally be used. You know, good.
Yeah. Cool. I'm just thinking on now, there's anything kind of social media way, like something on your Facebook page that can let people know. I wonder if Facebook have thought about that. I know that on Facebook, if you do pass away or you're someone that you know passes away, you can give someone the keys to your account through Facebook now. Right. So that rather than having a profile that's out there forever, that people can't access and update and say, look, this person's passed away, you can actually give someone that you trust access to your account, basically, so that if you pass away, it can be changed slightly so that it basically says this person's no longer with us, but we've left it here as a record of their life, that kind of thing. So, fascinating. My resource is a witty one. I'll end on a happy note. I couldn't stop thinking when we were doing the little write-up before we came on air about Young Frankenstein. The movie. Which is one of my favorite films, funny film. There's a great line Gene Wilder says in it about hearts and kidneys are tinker toys. I'm talking about the central nervous system, because he's obviously trying to reach this point where he can wake this creature up. And he says, hearts and kidneys are tinker toys. I always kind of, that was my takeaway quote for this episode. But it's a great film. Funny. And I think it's actually just about to come out as a West End play as well.
All right. Well,
Mel Brooks has done it. You know, he's done The Producers as a play, and did he do another one? Can't remember. Anyway, but it's coming out, and it's going to be in the West End soon. So if you're in London or you can get down, check it out, because I believe it's going to be pretty amazing.
Sounds good to me.
Cool. Happy, Sean?
Yeah, I'm good. I am good.
We'll end it there. We'll be back next week as ever. Livingthepresent.co.uk for all the show notes and links. Take care till next week. Sean, you have a good one.
And you take care.
We'll catch up soon. See you, everyone.
See ya. Bye.
See ya.